Tell me more about how his eyes look, Simon.
It's almost as if Simon enjoys being chastised by Baz or something.
Like, is this how you describe your enemies? It's really not.
Hot.
Yeah, like, basically. I feel like I just want to be like, quote-unquote, enemies for every time we bring up Baz.
You want to get sexy?
Yeah, let's get to the sexy stuff.
Hello, and welcome to Escape from Reality, a podcast where two queer IRL witches talk about Any Way the Wind Blows by Rainbow Rowell. I am Lark Malachi Gray.
And I am Jesse Blount, and today we're talking about chapters 41 and 42 of Any Way the Wind Blows. Chapter 41, Simon has brought Baz to his hashtag bachelor life flat with only a mattress on the floor. He swears he's going to buy some furniture, and when Baz asks with what money, Baz learns about Simon's inheritance from the fucking mage. Baz then proceeds to do what I would have done, which is attempt to have gay sex with the chosen one on the bed fucking Davy paid for. They end up talking and flirting and kissing, but the kissing part gets intense kind of quickly, so Baz has them slow down so Simon can calm down a little bit. They also end up discussing why folks have quote-unquote weak magic and if Smith Richards is for real. They really could use some help from Penny right now. Chapter 42. Penny, meanwhile, is at her flat, relentlessly dunking on Shepard for his engagement for a demon, which is what friends are for. She also mentions that mages used to get arranged married, and they have fairy tales about them. Not actually about fairies. You know. You guys get it. They are still working through the parameters of the curse, like Shepard not being able to be turned into a vamp, last book, or apparently being able to go into the fairy realm to get laid because going under hell or whatever is a kind of immortality. Shepard asks what happens to the maidens in the story, which, like all fairy tales, they get out of their terrible arranged marriages by trickery or loopholes, which sparks an idea in Penny.
It sure does. Yeah. And, just a reminder, every episode is longer on Patreon. Maybe join us there if you want to hear bonus content and also get access to all the other stuff we do over there and like keep my lights on, wins all around. There's also tons of other cool ways you can support us. Everything is in the show notes, and I encourage you to look there to find out about them.
Right. And there are a variety of ways to support us. Obviously, financially, really important. But if you are unable to do that, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes. Not only do we directly see those comments, a lot of the podcast catchers, whatever they're called, aggregate those, take those reviews, and that helps people find us and decide if we're a cool show to listen to, which we are. So you should please consider doing that, like right now.
Yeah, exactly. All right, yeah, and now we're going to get started with Easy Come, Easy Go, where we talk about everything that doesn't go anywhere else. I think that my favorite thing from this series so far might be the smash cut that we get between these two chapters from Baz saying, when has Bunce ever ignored a dangerous proposition, to Penny's chapter opening with, maybe we should just summon the demon.
It's so good. And it's so funny. It's just, what a perfect just like smash cut of like two chapters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just exquisite writing. It's really good.
It's really excellent. Yeah. But also it's like, Penny, you could pick up your phone too. You could be doing two dangerous things at once. Live your best life.
She is honoring Simon's request to be left alone. She's doing her best to do the right thing, which I respect. I get that. I don't know. I mean, I feel like Simon laid down a really clear boundary, and it's going to have to be him and not Baz that clearly asks her to disregard the previous boundaries.
That's fair. That is fair. I just really can't tell you enough how much I love the bit where Baz is like, anything that would piss the mage off is a turn on. And I'm just like,
the amount that I was like just being so thrilled about how thrilled you were while reading it, while I was reading it. I was just like, this is Jesse's like the embodiment of your entire attitude towards the mage and people like the mage. It just made me so happy. I was like, yeah, just thrilled for you.
It's like, it just makes me so happy. And Simon's like, wait, what? And it's like, I hope one day, Simon, you too will get to a place to be like, fuck you, the mage.
Yeah. My easy come is pretty light this week.
So is mine. I have literally one more thing.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so my only other thing is that I just think it's so funny and so Penny that she even had to ask why Shepherd was trying to go home with a fairy. Like, there's more than one reason anyone ever goes home with a fairy.
Yeah.
I feel like even in children's fairy stories, when people go home with fairies, like, it's not explicitly stated that it's for sex, but it's like, she ensorcelled him, he was in love, she led him under the hill. Like, you don't say that they're gonna bang, but like, it's still the same reason. There's only the one.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I tried to do a little bit of research about this, and apparently this is kind of from jump, like Western Europe, fairy stories have involved fairies luring people away for sex.
See?
It's like, wow, I didn't realize this was like baked into the concept of like fair, like Western style fairies. It's like seducing you away, and it's like, take me away, Earth is ghetto. I'm ready to go. Under the hill, through the fog, through the woods, into the mushroom circle, wherever you need me to go.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay. Yes, please. What is your other thing?
All right. Okay. And so my last thing is just, I have to mention, when Simon is listing diseases, he's like, nomadic fever, but it's spelled with a G, so it's like nomadic fever. Yeah. Like the garden gnome. I just thought it was funny.
That's all. It is funny.
Yeah, that was my last thing. I'm just like,
wordplay that works is better on the page, maybe, than trying to explain on a
podcast. Yeah, I realize. I'm like, wait, you don't pronounce the G. I'm just I'm like, yep, okay.
Yeah, I feel like you have to like maybe like lean into the like nomadic fever.
Yeah.
To be able to do the pun out loud as best you can.
Maybe it makes your skin porcelain or something, like porcelain.
Yeah.
It was a listener of this podcast who was like, yo, you should watch Romeo and Juliet, right?
Yeah, it was. And thank you, listener, because we did. And it was great.
It was very, yeah, it was pretty incredible. Really, the voice actors in that movie, I'm like, why is this stacked? It was so many, like the amount of talent in this movie. But like, honestly, the fact that whenever the gnomes touch each other, it makes like a clinking noise. Like if you were putting a teacup on like a ceramic china plate, is just like, just the extra touch was really making it for me.
Totally.
All right. Now I'm actually done.
All right. Welcome to I See a Little Silhouette of a Man, where we talk about character development. I have a tiny bit about Simon. Most of my Simon stuff is in Face the Truth, obviously, but I did here just want to say that I am proud of him for the fact that, like, if he may know fuck all about what he's doing with his life or like how he's gonna get there or anything, but he's like, I do not want to go to university, and I'm fine with that. And I was like, that's my boy. I'm so proud of you.
I know, actually. Yeah, I really love that he's just like, I'm just gonna get a job, like, that's fine. And I'm like, that's great. Have a much less stressful existence, Simon. Yeah. Go outside. Carry some stuff. It'll be great.
Yeah.
And it's just nice to see Simon here feeling, I guess, neutral about his future, which sometimes is great. Sometimes feeling neutral about a thing that used to, like, stress you out or bring you anxiety is, it's good. It's a good thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I guess I just also love that before the kissing happens, they're having a kind of cute, intimate, meandering conversation, like, while they're cuddling, about Simon's future, and also just, like, Simon's, like, stretching his wings out, and it's just, it's so nice. They're still doing it. They're still being real cute, making their relationship work.
Yeah, it's a really lovely moment of just, you know, we have this refrain from Simon that we'll talk more about of him being like, is this what people do? And it's very much a like, yeah, that is what people do. You just talk about your day and like lay next to each other in bed and are cozy and like comfortable and intimate in a way that doesn't have any like pressure. And it's nice.
Right. Yeah. I'm just so happy for them that they get this.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think everything else I also have for this will be in Face the Truth.
Yeah. I have a little bit about Shepherd. I feel like, and I might be incorrect, so please let me know if I am. I feel like we get more specifics about Shepherd, like, aesthetically than any other character. Like, I almost feel like Rainbow Rowell knows who Shepherd is more than she knows who any of these other characters are, or maybe in a different way, and maybe it's because he lives in our world. But we get these, like, specific, like, pins and patches that he has that, like, indicate what shows he likes. And here we have him wearing, like, a specific shirt. We don't get that kind of as much with other characters. Like, we have, you know, one specific artist that Baz knows a violin song of, and we know some like music that Fiona listens to and stuff. But
I guess this actually, I wonder if part of this is just showing how mage culture isn't as fun as normal culture, where Keith Haring, for example, like super iconic artist that even people who don't know what Keith Haring's whole deal is, or like even what he looks like, could see one of the like thick line dogs or people and be like, I recognize that. That's a thing.
Yeah. You
know, capital letter.
And
it is
so exactly what Shepherd would wear too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
To the point where I was like, oh, it's probably that one with like the heart. Like, honestly.
I guess I was thinking it was just one of the ones that just has like people on it, which is what a bunch of them look like, as opposed to a specific Keith Haring work.
There's that the really common one of the like two people like holding up the heart is on like a lot of shirts. When I looked at them, I was like, oh, that's the one.
Yeah.
It just feels like the most, I think he would wear a lot of them, but that was the one that felt the most Shepherd-y.
You know, that makes sense. Especially since his last name is Love. I mean, yeah. Come on.
And he loves a pun.
And I think it just is, I guess it's a sign to us that Shepherd is not as, even though he is interested in the world of mages and maybes, that he's not so removed from normal culture that he isn't, like, he isn't as plainly dressed as our mage trio, who is just, you know, wearing, I'm sure, very, like, plain-looking kind of clothes without, like, stuff on it, because it's like, what even is this? Like, why would I do that?
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. So maybe it's just more fun to describe what Shepherd is wearing, because Shepherd would be wearing something, right, like a Keith Haring t-shirt, or have a TARDIS patch on his jacket, versus everyone else is just wearing, I don't want to say like simple, but like nothing that has any recognizable cultural iconography.
Right.
Like, I'm sure Baz and Fiona have like some designer shit. Like,
well, Fiona, I'm sure, wears like punk band shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah. And probably a vintage pair of, like, Doc Martens, you know, like that kind of stuff. And I'm sure, right, I'm sure Bez has some fancy designer shit that Simon has no idea what any of that, you know, is. So, yeah, I think that would be the extent of it, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Do you have other stuff about Shepherd?
I don't. I have one thing about Penny, though, I realize.
Okay.
Is that Shepherd is like, can you please stop? And Penny's like, I won't know. And I think maybe Shepherd doesn't realize that Penny is the friend where, for the rest of their lives, if they like actually get married and have kids, she's never going to stop making fun of him for this. Like, she's never going to forget, and she's never going to not every once in a while be like, yeah, remember that one time I had to get you out of a demon marriage? You remember that?
Yeah.
your first fiance? And he's just like, please stop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just love that kind of level of being petty. I'm just being like, I will forgive, but I will never forget.
Yeah, I thought, you know, it is a really interesting thing, too, because, like, in general, my position is if someone's like, this, like, genuinely bothers me, please don't do it, that you should respect it. And also, Shepherd is like, I don't know, I kind of ended up weirdly siding with Penny more than I expected to in this when she's like, I'm probably still going to make fun of you, though, because he's like, it's not funny. Like, would it be funny if I were a woman being forced to marry a demon? And I just, like, really highlighted that word forced there because I was like, my guy, you proposed. Like, you are spinning a version of this in your head that does not line up with what Penny is making fun of you about. Because, like, she's making fun of you for proposing to a demon. That is not...
Yeah.
That's not the same as what you're... talking about.
And worst of all, not being aware beforehand that what he was doing was proposing to a demon, because it's just like, well, a giant gave me this instruction, so let's just try it out. And it's,
yeah, it's what is that, like, that classic meme, the, like, where someone shoots someone and then is like, why would whoever do this?
Yeah,
it feels like Shepherd is very much being like, I am the victim here. I read the thing and I didn't know what it said, and now I'm being forced to marry a demon. And it's like, everyone told you not to do that, including the person who gave you the thing. So, like,
yeah,
accept some responsibility and take your teasing from your friend who's going to get you out of this fucking marriage contract. So.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there isn't anyone in Shepherd's acquaintance who could do this for him. Some very funny teasing is the cost of this from Penny.
Yeah.
Who, again, also doesn't have to do this.
Right.
But she's a good friend.
And she loves a challenge.
She loves a challenge. And also, Shepherd is hot, which is also, I think, really, as Shepherd knows, getting him pretty far.
Yeah.
Yeah, being hot and charismatic will get you, I mean, being charismatic will get you pretty far. Being also attractive on top of that. Yeah, so.
Yep. Welcome to Face the Truth, where we talk about things that are fucked up. Yeah, my first note is trauma and sex and vulnerability, and I figured we could just take it from there.
Yeah, for folks that aren't reading along, the second half of Simon's chapter is him going from cuddling Bass to, I feel like I was having a hard time describing what is actually happening. Like, Simon gets, like, really hyper-focused on, like, kissing Baz and touching him and not... And afterwards, when Baz is like, stop, take some deep breaths, he's kind of like... It felt to him like when Simon would go off in the first book with his magic. And I guess I was just thinking about it in sort of a emotional dysregulation kind of way.
Yeah, I think that the reason we don't totally know what's happening is because we're in Simon's POV and he's dissociating. Mm-hmm. So we only have sort of the information that Simon has access to. So, like, Simon gets in this state where basically it seems like Baz becomes, like, the only thing that he is able to, like, hold on to. I think because being intimate and vulnerable requires, like, letting down basically the only thing that's, like, keeping Simon a solid human right now.
Mm-hmm.
He just has, like, flashes. He's, like, fixated on, like, the way that Baz smells and, like, kissing him and touching him. And, like, he doesn't know what's happening. So we don't know what's happening because we're in Simon's head. And I don't know if we ever get this from Baz's point of view. It'll be interesting to see if we do or not.
Yeah, I feel like I don't remember. But yeah, I think I feel like you saying that it feels like Simon's like disassociating a little bit feels right to me. I do think even though it was painful for Simon at the in the moment for Bess to be like, actually stop, we're gonna take a step back from this, was actually really excellent and good for Simon to then sort of tune back into his feelings, even though he was like, this is the part where I normally would leave, like I feel like crying, I just feel I am back in my body and back to like feeling emotions, and I don't like that.
Yeah. Why do you say that it was painful for him?
Don't have my book with me. The description, I guess the description that Simon gives when Baz is like holding onto his wrist and it's like, let's take a deep breath, and it's just sort of, and Simon's just like, fine, or like, not like fine, but
he's sort of, okay, so he's like in his state and he's like, my hands are in the air, Baz is holding my wrists, Simon, he hisses, I try to kiss him, I'm lost, nothing is enough, Simon, he says, stop. I let go, the only way I can manage, by going limp. Baz shoves me off of him and I fall on my side. Sorry, I gasp. I try to cover my eyes, but he's still holding my wrists.
I guess I just feel like the transition of being taken out of that moment is maybe not painful, maybe more like jarring. Yes. Yeah. And even though it's like jarring and then Simon is upset about his own reaction, like when he starts to tear up, but Baz is like, we're going to work through this. And they kind of, they get to a point where Baz like can like says something that like makes Simon laugh, even though he's still kind of like crying, and just sort of like Baz is doing a really good job of grounding Simon in this moment. And even though Simon is like, what if this happens all of the time? Part of me is like, if you keep going on this path, maybe it will still happen, because healing isn't a linear thing. But it feels very hopeful to me that you maybe won't always have this reaction, you know?
Yeah, totally. Right. Just staying the first time and being like, oh, Baz isn't actually, you know, I think Simon has this idea that Baz is like, what the fuck? And Baz is like, nope, you're just like, I think it makes sense that Baz is like, compares it to Simon going off, because I think that's also him going into basically a dissociative state and just acting, right? Yeah. And so Baz is used to this, even outside of it having anything to do with their sex life. He's like, I know what that's looks like on you, and like, I understand and I care about you, and I'm not mad, I'm not anything, I'm just here, and we'll get through it. And it's like, obviously, check, step one towards this not happening anymore is learning that it's like okay that it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a good job while Simon works through his trauma response that we see here. And I don't know, that shit's hard. I'm like trying to unlearn how to just not like bottle up my feelings and like not talk about it. And I'm like, this shit is so hard.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's so hard. But also, you know what's real cool? Having healthy emotional regulation.
Yep.
So, yes. I guess I just like deeply empathize with Simon. And I'm also just like, you're on the right track. It sucks. But this is part of the process of... Shit, what is it called? The thing, I know it's not called the same thing in humans, but with dogs, when you try to like, they're having a stressful thing and then you give them the treat so they can try to sort of not associate the stressful thing with them being like...
Counter conditioning?
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good job, Simon and Baz.
Yeah. And then they have this really like sad and sweet conversation about where they both of their feelings of unlikelihood of getting even to the place that they're at now, where Baz is like, yeah, I thought I was going to have like a, you know, fake wedding to a woman and just like sneak off and fuck guys and eat their pets. And Simon's like, well, I thought I'd be dead. And it's like, see, even this, you know, terribly emotionally fraught devastating situation that you're in is, like, honestly so much better than either of those options that, like...
It sure is. It sure
is. You're already winning.
So. Yeah. Truly, they are already winning. Baz describing his honestly just, I don't know, 1950s style, can't, just married to a woman, cruising at night. No one knows.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, I'm glad neither of them obviously are having to do that.
Yeah. Welcome to Caught in a Landslide, where we rant about stuff.
So, the other thing that I really love in these chapters, as well in Simon's chapter specifically, is Baz gives us such an excellent rundown of sort of like some theories about the why and hows of differing magical ability in the world of mages that I love so much, because a lot of fantasy series that have magical users, I'm like, did you think this through and just not want to put it in the book? Which, I mean, again, like, it doesn't have to be like a whole long exposition about how magic works in your world, but again, that's what I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of what Baz says, where it's like, right, not everyone can project their voice or think really quickly on their feet, or, you know, and these are very obviously specific to this magic system that is all about what you're saying and how you're saying it. But I just really love his explanation, which is clearly how the magic in this world works. Simon, of course, being the unfortunate exception.
Right.
It's just really great. I just really appreciate being like, yeah, it's kind of like in the way that bodies are different. It's like magical abilities and how you tap into that can be different. And some of it is, you know, epigenetics, and some of it is, you know, things you can control, or like things like your education and like how driven you are to do this thing. You know, are you comfortable speaking in public or projecting? Like, even like projecting your voice is a thing that you have to practice. Like,
right.
So yeah, I just really appreciate that it wasn't just a like, well, either you're born with all the magic or you're not.
Right. Yeah, I appreciated it too.
A++ world building here.
Yep, always.
Yeah. And in the last book of the series, where we don't necessarily need that in the first two books, but it's really great to have this here, where it's like, well, we are trying to figure out what Smith Richard is doing and what makes people have quote-unquote weak magic, or, you know, whatever, a not as strong ability to channel the magic.
Right. Welcome to Is This Just Fantasy, where we talk about magic and science and research that we did. Penny makes this, I think, pretty absurd claim, especially considering that she, like, knows about science, that mages intermarrying keeps their bloodlines robust. And I was like, I get that, like, magic is genetic and stuff, but I also know that you know why the royal family has hemophilia, for example.
Right. Exactly. And it's right, and it's not just the British royal family. Like, Western royal families are all just were real inbred, and yeah. Which caused a variety of health issues for everyone involved. Would not call that a robust bloodline.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like you would need to be like shopping around like globally, which actually it sounds like Baz's family was doing, right? Like, I don't know whether his grandparents' marriages were arranged or not, but like they were from various countries, not even just like various places. Well, their countries are the size of our states, so never mind. But like,
right,
you know, probably with the understanding of like, if we want like super powerful mages to marry each other, we need to spread that gene pool out, you know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, it's not going to go well.
Exactly. Yeah. Which book was it about the joke where that's the joke about the singles cruises for mages? Maybe not back in whatever ye old olden days Penny is talking about with the arranged marriages, but I'm kind of like, now you would definitely want to, if you could get a cruise that was international and there was people from all over, it's like you probably would want to do that, especially if you don't want to marry someone that you went to school with.
Right. Or you would actually maybe pointedly not want to marry people that you went to school with and be like, God, the chances that you are my cousin not that long ago is like way too high for me. I don't think we should do this.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I guess we did talk a little bit. My fairy research, we also kind of talked about. So I guess fairy stories are real old and from a variety of sources, it turns out, and often about sex. And actually, the article I found was pretty useful. It was like an excerpt from a book. I don't know what the book is about. Something about goddesses, whatever. But what's really cool is I find the information that I wanted, which is like, where does this sort of amorphous soup of fairy lore kind of come from? Because there's, in here we get that going to fairy involves like going into a mist of some kind. And as we mentioned earlier, there's a lot of, even just from pop culture knowledge of like, how do you get to the fairy realm? It's like fairy rings or what have you. And I guess I was just curious, like, where are some of the sources this is pulled from? And it seemed from my research that a lot of the sort of literary references are pulled from like various fragments of sources before like the 13th century, it looks like, where people have like recipes for salves to ward off fairies or elves or the sort of classification of fairies as not an angel or not a demon, but something still mythological that you can interact with in your life. So that was, I mean, pretty cool. And I guess Chaucer, who is in the Dead White Dude English canon, also mentions the fairy, and maybe even, I think it looks like he mentioned it about like the King Arthur mythos. And I mean, again, that is also just filtered in so much of Western media. So yeah, it's very old, and people have believed in fairies for a long time.
Yeah.
pretty cool.
Agreed. Yeah. I have a lot of like fairy tale anthologies from many places and time periods. It's one of my things that I'm into. They're fun. It's also very fun how much consistency there is, like, regardless of country of origin or region of origin. It's like, yeah, they're just real, obviously.
Yeah, I feel like when there's things like that culturally where it has shown up across so many different cultures that are geographically, I mean, yes, obviously the scope of human history, people have just migrated to various continents of the world, but right, like the fact that just independently, like different places all over the world would have things like dragons, and you're just like, dragons clearly were real, sorry y'all.
Yep, exactly.
Part of it is probably dinosaur bones, which obviously really exists, but I'm also just like, if every culture essentially has something like a dragon, then I'm like, who am I gonna believe? Thousands of years of human storytelling, or like eight white dudes in a university? Like, come on, y'all.
Yeah, 100%. Agreed.
Anyway.
Yeah, okay. So one last thing from me today is that we've had Simon and Baz argue before about whether or not Baz has a soul. And Baz is like, you know, I lost my soul. And Simon's like, no. And Baz is like, well, how would you possibly know that? And Simon's like, looking at you? I don't know. Like, you just clearly have a soul. And I actually think that the fact that Shepard can't get turned into a vampire because immortality would void his marriage contract means that Baz does in fact have his soul. Because if vampirism killed you and you lost your soul per like Buffy lore, Shepard's soul would have gone to the demon to get married, and his body would have stuck around as a vampire. So...
Right, so...
Baz has a soul.
There we go. Great. I mean, we also already knew that, considering knowing Baz.
Right, I mean, Simon's logic was impeccable. Yeah. I wasn't questioning it, right. But, like, we now have...
Yeah.
Solid magical science evidence to back up Simon's claims.
Yeah. Good catch.
Thank you. I'm always on the lookout for proving Baz wrong about his bad feelings about himself.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it would be hard to have a lot of self-loathing if you're like, I really don't want to have to drink animals' blood, and maybe I might turn other people into a vampire. Which, again, if it was that easy, there'd be so many more vampires, Baz. So
I know. I know. He's anxious.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode. Just a reminder that The Gaily Planet is now a Star Trek The Next Generation podcast. Haven't said that in a minute. Next time, we will be talking about chapters 43 and 44. Check the show notes for everything. And until next time,
Scaramouche!